Ay, bobo. Welcome to the Agua Cerrito podcast show, where we honor the divine, spark personal liberation, and deconstruct Haitian voodoo. I'm your host, Knowledge, also known as Konef Kife. Every episode is a digital offering to the sacred spirits, ancestors, and vibrant culture of Haitian voodoo. Through storytelling, interviews, and reflections, we will explore its roots, its power, and its impact. Voodoo is more than spirituality. It is life, legacy, and liberation.
Are you passionate about Haitian voodoo, its history, and its role in shaping the Haitian culture in the world? Then let us introduce you to COSAMBA, the premier scholarly association dedicated to the study of Haitian voodoo and Pan-African religions. COSAMBA brings together scholars, practitioners, and the broader community to explore the richness of Pan-African traditions. Through research, conferences, and community engagement, COSAMBA keeps the sacred tradition of Haitian voodoo alive while fostering deeper understandings. Whether you're a scholar, a student, or simply someone seeking to learn more about these powerful faith traditions, COSAMBA is your gateway to knowledge and connections. Visit COSAMBA, COSANBA.org to learn more and join the movement.
Want to make a difference in a child's life? The Empowerment Network 10 Global, founded by Dr. Charlene Desir, is transforming communities by providing children with opportunities to learn, grow, and thrive. Through summer camps, leadership programs, and educational support, 10 Global creates safe, nurturing spaces where children can develop confidence, life skills, and a brighter future. Centered in Haitian voodoo cosmology and African spirituality, these programs give kids the tools they need to succeed, whether it's academically, socially, spiritually, or emotionally. But we need your help. By donating, volunteering, or spreading the word, you can help provide scholarships, supplies, and life-changing experiences for these young minds. Visit 10global.org today. That's TENGLOBAL.org. Get involved or get connected. Together, we empower. Together, we rise. Welcome to the Agua Cerrito podcast. I'm your host, Professor Knowledge, Professor Konekife. Tidimie are short bonus episodes designed to laser focus in on a particular topic. And for those that are new to the show, the word tilimia means little light in Haitian Creole, which is similar to saying the phrase, let me shed some light. And so in today's tilimia, I want to hold space for some of the amazing voodoo priests and priestesses who were instrumental to the Haitian Revolution. Now, in the past two episodes on the podcast, we took some time to discuss the events leading up to the Haitian Revolution. And in our most recent episode, in episode 10, Dr. Mumbo Charlene was able to share her experiences taking a pilgrimage to Bois Caïma. So listeners, if you haven't had a chance, go ahead and check out episodes 9 and 10, which really lay out the foundation and insights into the events leading up to the Haitian Revolution, as well as the role Vodou played in that. Now, in both of those episodes, we talked about some of the Vodou priests and priestesses that I'm going to delve into today. But given the role that they played in the founding of this country, I wanted to dedicate an episode to them. It is very rare in the history of the world as we know it today, and it's been said time and time again, that Haiti was not the only region that had slave rebellions. However, it was the first and only successful slave rebellion that led to the birth of a nation. And the fact that Vodou, as the religious system of the enslaved Africans that won this fight for freedom, played such a critical role. It is important. It is important to call out and center the Vodou priestess. It is important to call and center the Vodou priest and priestesses that fought alongside the enslaved Africans towards liberation. So a couple of considerations for this conversation. First, I am not a historian. I did research, like any graduate student does. So I did research across a number of different sources. I'm saying that to say that what I'm sharing is what has been documented. But remember, Vodou is an oral tradition. So I'm sure that there are far more other details about these leaders that is not going to be covered in today's episode that is out there. And I'm hopeful that in the future, we'll have elders, we'll have scholars, we'll have historians on the show to maybe help fill in any gaps that I may have missed. So that's one. The second thing is, while I will share information about a couple of individuals, I want to acknowledge that there were many, many unknown and unnamed enslaved Africans who were also healers, diviners, seers, various spiritual leaders of various different ethnic groups that were on the island at the time of the Haitian Revolution. And they all played a role in some way, shape, or form towards the fight for liberation. And so in that vein, while I'm only going to speak about a number of them here, I want to take a moment to honor all of the spiritualists, both known and unknown, who were not afraid to preserve their religious identity in the best way that they knew how, to preserve their culture, to preserve their indigenous practices. Because it is those practices, it is those cultural African identity, that knowledge, those ancestral perspectives and information that they were able to tap into in order for the collective to fight and win freedom. So that I think that's an important element to consider. And the third thing is, I will do my best to grammatically say the names, to correctly say the names of figures and locations. And if I don't say them correctly, I know the laws, the spirits, and my ancestors. I know that they know my heart. I'm doing my best to reclaim my ancestors' native languages. I'm actually taking a class on Haitian Creole this semester. So I am working on my language. I'm working on my French. And I thank my laws, my spirits, my ancestors in advance for their grace. I'm doing my best grammatically. So I just want to make sure I put that out there as well, that I'm going to do my best to say the names as they are. So having said that, one thing I do want to call out, if it wasn't mentioned in the last two episodes, The Haitian Revolution was not just a war of men against men or women against women. It was a spiritual war, right? It was a war. It was a battle of spirit. It was a battle of different realms. It was a battle of forces greater than flesh. And that is an important distinction to keep in mind. At the heart of the battle stood a number of Vodou priests and priestesses who were not only warriors of the earth realm, but they were also warriors of the sky realm, right? And so, having said that, I'm going to start with our first Vodou priest that I'd like to spotlight today. Let's start with Dudi Boukman. So, Dudi Boukman, as we know, was born around 1767. And he was born in the region called Senegambia, right? And that is corresponding to today's present-day Senegal and the Gambia. And Boukman was born into a Muslim family and served as a cleric in his early years. Once he was captured and sold into slavery, Boukman was then sent to Jamaica, to the island of Jamaica. And because of his background, because he was born as a Muslim, because he was very well read, very articulate, he earned the name Boukman. So it was Boukman was the name that he was kind of given, which evolved into Boukman as we know it. Boukman was very rebellious, and he spent a lot of his time teaching his fellow enslaved Africans. He spent time teaching them how to read and really tried to teach them that spirit of independence. And because of how articulate, how smart he was, it was clear that he was extremely well-read. He really posed a fear. He really posed a threat to the colonizers that on the plantations that he was working on. And so because of that, Boukman was sold to a French plantation owner in Haiti at the time, Saint-Domingue. So there, once he arrived to Saint-Domingue, Boukman began to embrace Haitian Vodou. And it was during his time on the island, he eventually became an initiated priest, or in Creole, we call them Wunga. And listeners, we're going to talk about the role of priests and priestesses in general. We're going to talk about that in a future episode. So Boukman, having embraced Haitian Vodou, really becoming embraced into the indigenous practices, he still had his very rebellious nature that he had from early in his earlier life. And while, if you remember at the time when Boukman was enslaved on the island of Hispaniola, this is when Code Noir, or the Black Code, was being enforced onto the enslaved Africans at that time. And listeners, I talk about Code Noir at length in episode 9. So check that out. But during that time, even though many enslaved Africans were being forced to convert to Catholicism, they were being forced to convert to Christianity, Boukman refused the God of the white man. Boukman said, "The one that spoke of God but demanded blood." That is how he referred to the God of the white man. And instead, he held fast to his own spirits. So even as the enslaved around him was being converted, he refused. He had a complete refusal of doing so. And it was from this spirit of leadership earlier on, from the time that he was enslaved and captured brought to the New World, brought to Jamaica, and then eventually brought to Hispaniola. Because of his steadfast leadership and his spiritual guidance as a Wunga, he rose to leadership, right? And he became a central figure among the enslaved population. So it was Bukman, and I think I read the Bukman prayer in episode 9, where he essentially co-led the Bwakaima ceremony with Mumbo, Cecile Fatima, which I'm going to talk about next. He co-led that event with her that eventually ignited the Haitian Revolution. And after the infamous Bwakaima event that took place in 1791, it was not too long after that he was captured in the northern part of Haiti. He was a key leader of the earlier aspects of the revolution, but the French captured him, and they believed that if they kill him, that they will essentially kill the revolution. So Bwakaima took place on August 14th, 1791. On November 7th of that same year, 1791, the French captured him. They cut off his head and they put it on display as a means to quell the rebellion that had just kind of set off since August of that particular year. And they thought that killing Bukman was essentially killing the revolution. But what they did not know was that the revolution was already in motion. There was nothing that was going to stop the revolution. And Bukman's work and Bukman's leadership had already unleashed a fury. It had unleashed a storm that was not going to be able to be stopped. And I think that's really an important element in that while Bukman was one of the earlier leaders and a Vodou priest of the revolution, the work that he did, the groundwork that he laid was essential towards the building blocks of freedom. So I'm going to take a moment and I want to talk now about Mumbo Cecile Fatima and the role that she played in the Haitian Revolution. So a little bit about her background. So Mumbo, again, is a priestess. So priestess Cecile Fatima was born in the late 18th century in Saint-Domingue. She was the daughter of an enslaved African woman and a Corsican prince. Her mixed heritage she really stood out, right? Because she was considered very, very beautiful, and very, very smart, very intelligent. And she really stood out just because of her beauty. And it's really interesting because she was considered more of like a mulatto. Even if she did have mixed heritage, one would assume at that time she would have had more freedoms. Her father ended up selling her family into slavery. However, Cecile Fatima secured her freedom either before or during the 1791 uprising. And I want to take a moment to read an excerpt. There's a book by Professor Baina Bello. The book is called The Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution. And listeners, if you don't have that book, that's a great, I call it a great coffee table book to have on reference, that really speaks not only about the Vodou priestesses of the revolution, but just all the women of the Haitian Revolution. It's an amazing book to have as an overall reference. I want to read a passage from Baina Bello's book here. So in the passage she reads, and this is in regards to Cecile Fatima, as a captive assigned to field work, she grew into a master of communication and formed codified networks all over the island. It was at this point that she began to organize what would eventually become the only successful revolt of African captives in our story. Cecile trained her network to be a stealth while transmitting information from plantation to plantation miles away from each other. She created codes for names of places and people so that the enslaved informants could not notify slavers. It took Cecile and her network of women years to organize the most famous gathering in Haitian Our Story, now referred to in the books as the ceremony at Bois Caïma. So she was not only a Vodou priestess, and you're going to see this time and time when we speak about each of these leaders. They were strong, headfast leaders. They were strategic. They were disciplined. They were focused. And they leaned heavily into their spirituality to help them meet the mission that they were destined to carry out. And so as a mumble, Cecile, with Boukman, presided over the Bois Caïma ceremony. And you can see, based on the passage from Baiana Bello's book, is that this wasn't something that just happened, you know, by accident, right? This was years of organizing, years of creating a network of communication across plantation after plantation in order to arrive at that specific moment. And it is said that during the actual ceremony that took place after the strategic meeting, it is said that Cecile Fatima became possessed by the spirit Ezuli Dota and performed a ritual sacrifice of a black pig, an act that galvanized the attendees to commit to the revolt. And this ceremony, again, was the catalyst, right? So after the war, the Haitian Revolution began, Cecile Fatima, she did not fade into silence. She continued to lead. She continued to be a healer. She continued to guide people as a mumbo, as a mother, as a pillar of strength. And she was able to do what very few revolutionaries live to do. She was able to live to see the nation she helped birth. And so after the war, she married Jean-Louis Pierrot, a general in the Haitian army who later became the president of Haiti in 1845. Together, they had a daughter called Marie-Louise. Fatima ended up living, it is reported that she lived until the age of 112. So she lived a very, very long life up in the northern parts of Haiti. So we want to hold space. You know, we just spoke about Boukman. We want to hold space for Boukman. We want to hold space for Mumbo Cecile Fatima. Now, I'm going to speak now about Marie Jean. Okay, so Marie Jean, her background is very interesting. There's not a lot of details about her earlier life. She, similar to Cecile, was of mixed heritage descent, and so she was referred to as a mulatto. And her role, she is best known for her military involvement, and infamously known for her role in the battle of the Crête à Pierrot. So this is the Battle of Crête à Pierrot in 1802. During that time, she fought alongside her husband, whose name was Louis. And it was said that eyewitnesses that watched her fight. Now, she was dressed in full military uniform with a rifle and expertly fighting against the French forces. It was said that the French really didn't know what to make of her at that time, because again, at that time, women were not known to take on the battlefield alongside men. And I think the role she played was very, very interesting at that time. Now, while it was not exactly confirmed that she was an actual priestess, many people believed that she was, given how fearless she was on the battlefield, right? And because of this reason, I decided to include her story in today's episode. So she may have been a priestess, she may not have been a priestess, but one thing was for sure, many people remembered her courage, her strength, her bravery on the field, that it is said that she fought like a child of Ogu, like an individual that was possessed by Ogu in a fearless, untouchable manner. And what's interesting is that Marie-Jeanne's roles and her actions on the battlefield challenged gender norms, right? And it also highlighted the important role that women played in the fight for Haiti's independence. So the Haitian Revolution wasn't a typical revolution in a sense that when you hear and talk about revolutions of the past, there's sometimes this idea that it is men that are trained soldiers that go off to war and then they leave women and children at home. That was not the case with this specific revolution. The Haitian Revolution was all hands on deck. Everyone played a role. And I think it was important that Marie-Jeanne's role really showed how important that women's roles were in the fight for freedom. It was said that Marie-Jeanne was a force of nature. You know, she was a woman who took up arms, stood beside men, stood beside her husband, proving that Haitian women do not wait to be saved. They fight for their own freedom. Aibobo bilolo. So I wanted, even again, it's not really confirmed if she was a priestess or not, because of her actions on the battlefield still reverberates in today's history books. So it's important to call her out in that regard. And the last leader that I'm going to talk about today, I want to talk about Macandal. So François Macandal was born in the early 18th century in the Kingdom of Congo, either in present-day Angola or in present-day what's called the Democratic Republic of Congo. And in that region, it's important to understand that in those regions, warriors and priests were one and the same, where their knowledge was a weapon as sharp as any others, right? So they had weaponry knowledge. They also had spiritual knowledge in those specific regions. And so when he was kidnapped and forced to enslavement in Saint-Domingue, his captors really didn't know who they had captured. So he was brought to work. Macandal was brought to work on a sugar plantation, and an accident on that plantation led to the loss of one of his arms. And after that accident, he escaped and ended up joining the Maroons. And we talked about the Maroons in episode 9, so definitely check that out. But Macandal did not just go and join the Maroons. He actually ended up becoming one of the most prominent Maroon leaders of that era. Because, again, he comes from his heritage. He comes from an ancestor of warriors, an ancestral lineage of a spiritual knowledge as well. So Macandal, he did not fight with guns alone as a leader, as a Maroon leader. He also fought with the spiritual knowledge he had. He had knowledge of herbs, of poisons, of nature itself. And he utilized his knowledge of weaponry, of herbs, of poison to collectively wage a campaign against the entire colonial plantation system. And being very strategic, Macandal orchestrated a network that decimated poisons among enslaved population, leading to the deaths of a number of colonizers. And he did this successfully for 6 years. He waged, it's almost like a war of silence. Like he silently waged war and no one knew where he was coming or when he was coming. However, because of how smart, how powerful, how knowledgeable he was of nature and of plants and herbs, people watched time and time again as enslavers and colonizers were being poisoned from plantation to plantation and watching their power crumble from within. And so he instilled so much fear in the hearts of many of the colonizers because they just never saw him coming until it was too late. And Macandal's expertise in strategy, in tactics, in knowledge of herbs, in knowledge of nature was simply unprecedented at that time. He created a completely new form of guerrilla warfare that challenged the very colonial power structure of the entire island. And so because the colonizers were so scared of him, they relentlessly pursued to capture him. And in 1758, they finally captured him. He was publicly executed by burning. And they burned him alive as a way to try to deter others who can do what he was doing. However, what Macandal did was not only show the enslaved Africans at that time an entirely new way of embracing their religious systems and embracing and understanding strategy and creating this entirely new guerrilla warfare tactics and campaign. He was also the one that said, you know, if we continue doing this, even if it's not me, but we continue doing these, we can win our freedom. You know, do not give up. He left those encouraging words with the enslaved Africans at that time. And so he was, you know, the work he did was critical in the beginning and laying the foundation for the Haitian Revolution to begin. And many people believe his spirit is still alive today, whispering in the ears of the oppressed. Some say he still walks among us, waiting for the day when his work will be needed again. So in closing, this is just a handful. This is, again, there's so many other individuals, but this was just a handful of individuals I wanted to take some time and call out. These were not just enslaved Africans. These individuals were not just men and women. They were not just priests and priestesses. The individuals I just talked about, they were spirits in flesh. They were forces of history, and they each were warriors who walked between the realms. They were warriors that knew how to walk between the earthly realm and the spiritual realm. And Haiti was not freed by colonial politics or European ideas. Let's be really clear. Haiti was freed by voodoo. Haiti was freed by the ancestors. Haiti became free by the spirits who refused to be silenced, who believed in not only liberation for the individuals on the island, but believed in liberation for all mankind, all people. And so I think that's important to call out, and that the warriors that I talked about still walk among us today. For I believe the battle is never truly over. It simply transforms from one state to another. And so the battle for freedom and the battle for liberation is only waiting for the next generation to rise. That is today's Tea Lumière episode. Tune in next week for our episode where we're going to talk about the concept of honor and respect and why that's important in Haitian Vodou. Thanks for tuning into the Agua Cerito podcast show. Thank you for joining us on the Agua Cerito podcast show. Together we honor our ancestors, embrace the beauty of Vodou, and step boldly toward liberation. If this episode resonated with you, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. It helps us amplify the spirit of Haitian Vodou even further. Join us next week as we continue this journey to connect, inspire, and uplift. Until then, walk boldly with your spirits. And remember, the Agua Cerito Show is not just a podcast. It is a vibration, a celebration, a path to freedom.